following is a presentation of Crane's Chicago Business, delivered by your earbuds at WGN Radio.
I'm Amy Guth, and this is Crane's Daily Gist. Today, a look at this week's top residential real estate stories with Crane's reporter Dennis Rodkin, including a change in Bronzeville, more change coming to the West Loop, and a little about Liz Phair's childhood home. That conversation coming up right after these stories. Northwestern University is set to open a biomedical research center on June 17th on its Chicago Academic Medical Campus. The 12-story building adds more than 600,000 square feet of research space to Northwestern's Feinberg School of Medicine and is designed for a future expansion that would allow it to more than double its size with up to 16 additional floors. It's the largest new building solely dedicated to biomedical research at a medical school in the U.S., according to the Association of American Medical Colleges. According to Northwestern, the facility will create 2,000 full-time jobs in addition to the more than 2,500 construction jobs created by the first phase of the building. It's expected to generate an additional nearly $400 million a year in economic activity in Chicago and enable Northwestern to increase its current amount of $700 million in total sponsored research funding by $150 million annually. Chicago-based Kraft Heinz has taken a pretty straightforward product, that being salad dressing, and is rebranding it as salad frosting, pitching it as a way for parents to dupe their kids into trying vegetables they might otherwise avoid. Kraft says that salad frosting is merely ranch dressing in a tube. The company wants its version of ranch, which is the most popular salad dressing in the U.S., to appeal to parents of kids with an overdeveloped sweet tooth. According to Kraft Heinz, 63% of American parents lie to their kids to get them to eat a wider variety of foods. Kraft Heinz head of marketing said in a statement that white lies are not only part of parenthood, but a tactic used by parents everywhere. Coming up, our weekly look at the local residential real estate market with Crane's Dennis Rodkin. That conversation after a quick word from our sponsor. At Wintrust, there's no one-size-fits-all solution because there's no one-size-fits-all business. They come in different sizes, in different industries, with different needs. You won't get cookie-cutter services based on your size. Wintrust provides personalized focus no matter what kind of business you run. Whether you're looking for deposit accounts, lending options, or treasury management solutions, Wintrust bankers are prepared to meet your business where you are and help you get to where you want to be. Find out more at Wintrust.com. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. We're joined now by Crane's Chicago Business residential real estate reporter Dennis Rodkin for his weekly visit, his weekly update of all the things happening. And there's always so much. I kind of keep this mental list of things I want to talk to you about. And then Thursday gets here and it's almost too much for us to manage.
I could write fewer stories if you like.
If you wouldn't mind, that would be really useful for me.
I'll see what I can do.
That'd be great. No, you know, here's where I want to start this week. There's a piece about Bronzeville and real estate developers and just big players in that space that I think is so interesting. Let's start there and talk about that one.
Okay. Well, for people who don't know, Bronzeville is sort of the mid-South Side, just off the lakefront. Generally, it runs sort of from 31st to 51st Streets and from the Dan Ryan to Cottage Grove, not all the way to the lake, but very close to the lake, and that figures into what's going on in Bronzeville now. Bronzeville, of course, is a very historic neighborhood, not only had a huge building boom in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, but then had another boom as Black people came up from the South in the Great Migration. But it has had several decades, or had several decades in the second half of the 20th century, of disinvestment and decline resulting from segregation and a lot of what has gone on in Chicago's history. So now there's this rebirth. And by now, I mean the 21st century. That's been going on for quite a while, but really building in the last few years. One of the numbers we have in the story that is pretty surprising is that in the past 12 months, there have been 34 houses sold in Bronzeville for $500,000 or more. In the 12 months before that, there were 32, which was a big leap up from the year before that when it was about 23. So there's a lot of $500,000 home construction going on and home sales. These aren't just homes being built. One of the things I like about what's going on in Bronzeville is there's already all this historic architecture, beautiful.
It's really beautiful there.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Great row houses, red brick, great gray stones, really a phenomenal area. However, lots of empty space as well because of, as I said, the decades of decline having to do with segregation. So you can build these new houses without pushing people out. And that's one of the things that I talked to the builders about. Are you displacing people? And one of the builders said, you know, I've built a few dozen homes and not pushed anybody out because there's all this empty land.
Which is, I think, so unique. We always hear about, as soon as there is any kind of redevelopment happening in any neighborhood, immediately people go, ah, gentrification, where's everyone going to go? What's happening? And that's a really unique and special place for Bronzeville to be.
It is. However, that doesn't mean that people who are there don't say, we're going to be pushed out. There are people in some of these historic homes, renters and homeowners, who say, well, when you build all that, you jack up the values everywhere,
sure,
you jack up the taxes everywhere, so we do end up being pushed out. We will see whether that's the effect. I tend to think it won't. One of the things that Alderman Pat Dowell, who runs the ward that this covers, one of the things she said is she's got in her ward about 30% of the housing is already subsidized in one form or another. Everybody wants retail to come in. Everybody wants restaurants and that sort of thing. And as she pointed out, the retailers don't really come in for lower income people. Like it or not, they don't. Perhaps they should, but they don't. So what she said is if we bring in these higher income people, we then bring the retailers who are attracted to them, but they serve everybody, not only the higher, but the lower income people, which is a nice sort of a strategic plan. Nevertheless, there are people who say, I'll be forced out.
Sure, sure. It's often that kind of short game versus long game of displacement, right? That we think of it being the really quick, okay, developers came in, everybody's out really quickly, or, you know, a residential building gets raised for something that's luxury and no one can afford, versus what you described, that kind of longer game where, okay, a few higher income people in a neighborhood might bring in more retail and jobs and this and this, but on the long term, it's going to price people out.
It might. Yeah. You can also play that long game if you're, that's a good way to look at it, the short game versus the long game. But another perspective on that is if you're one of these residents who's already been there, let's say you own the property, all of these things that are happening will elevate the value of your home. And that generates home equity that you may be able to use to not only invest in the community, but invest in your retirement and those sorts of things. So people who aren't priced out immediately may find that their home values go up and they benefit from that in these ways. They have money for retirement and other things.
All right. I want to switch to this other story, and that is about, speaking of vintage buildings, this is about Andersonville and a group that's looking at rezoning specifically to save buildings. I'm very interested in this story because I feel like every time a condo sign, a banner goes up on a construction fence, immediately the graffiti comes in.
Yeah.
The last four I've seen in my area, immediately some variation of no condos, please, or no more condos has gone in. And I think people kind of go, oh, this beautiful vintage building, well, bygones. Well, it's fallen apart. What can you do? Let's put in this big glass and metal kind of condo. But this is a very different approach. So this is a pretty cool story.
It is interesting. And look at the difference between what we just talked about in Bronzeville and what's going on in Andersonville. They're not the same distance from downtown, but one on the south and one on the north. In Andersonville, there are, of course, many beautiful old houses, beautiful old gray stones, multi-flat buildings. And in the area that they call SoFo, south of Foster, it's the last part of the neighborhood where the zoning allows construction of new multifamily condos. Just last fall, East Andersonville got its zoning changed so that you can't build new condos for the same reason that people in South Andersonville are now pursuing a similar change. Their feeling is a lot of these older homes sell to developers. A couple of them are on double lots or even larger, so you can put multi-unit buildings. You can put six condos, for instance, in the place of one house, which is profitable for the developer, also creates new housing that people, with all the new finishes and that sort of thing. But what you lose is the green space around the home, because often these are built lot line to lot line, as well as the architectural heritage of some of these houses that were built in Andersonville, especially in the 1890s and early 1900s, and have survived all this time. Some of them have been updated well, some badly, some not at all. Nevertheless, they're signals of what happened in this neighborhood 100 years ago, more than 100 years ago now, 120 years ago, should we let them fall just because a developer wants to put a multi-unit building in its place.
Right. And so there's this group that's organized to try to fight this. What are their odds right now? Does this look like this is going to work out for them? Will they save these homes, or will developers and their revenue win out?
it seems very likely that it will pass, partly because they have a lot of community support. The idea of this passed 57-7 at a community meeting. That's a small group, but it also was successful in East Andersonville, so you would think that in South Andersonville it would happen as well. And one of the reasons it's only happening now as opposed to a while ago is there's now a new alderman. And he, Matt Martin, Alderman Matt Martin, while campaigning, seemed to sort of side with these people. That may be too strong a word. He seemed to be sympathetic to what they were saying. So now that he's in office and getting his team set up, it seems likely, though of course not guaranteed, that they would succeed. But one thing they've succeeded at, Amy, coolest name ever.
I was just going to say,
don't
this
you love
is...
that?
This name is, we're, now it's a thing, because now we've done this 2 weeks in a
exactly.
row, because last week we were talking about naming that area of Lincoln Park, Whoa
right.
Baby.
Exactly.
And so this is, SOFO is the neighborhood.
South of Foster.
South of Foster. So this group is calling themselves the South of Foster Zoning Committee. So that is...
SOFO Zoco. I love that. I, you know,
which
and
sounds
they
like a trendy new bistro.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, let's meet for a drink. It's SOFO Zoco.
Yeah, exactly. Wake me up before you go-go.
Before you SOFO Zoco.
We're headed down to SOFO Zoco. Yeah, exactly.
It's perfect. I enjoy that. Well, we shall see. So what's kind of the timeline here on this all working out or not?
Kind of on hold. The alderman, okay. The statement from the alderman that I got for the story is, yes, we hope to work with these people. But again, he's brand new. And they've got to get everything set up. But it seems, I mean, it seems likely that something will happen soon and probably should, because there are a few houses in the neighborhood. It's 8 square blocks, but there are a couple of houses that are actually threatened right now.
So two other stories I want to talk about. One, I just feel like I would be doing a disservice to my early 90s self if I did not mention the story you had about Liz Phair's parents selling their Winnetka home. Because immediately, I think that property, anybody who listens to or has ever listened to Liz Phair, specifically Exile in Guyville,
yeah.
I think is keenly aware of the role that house played in her career and life and inspiration for her work.
Yeah, I would agree. So her family moved from Ohio to Winnetka, or to the Chicago area, when she was 9 years old, and in 1976. And this is when they bought this house, and her parents have just let it go 40 plus years later. Her father, as I think you might know, was a pretty important and pioneering researcher in HIV/AIDS, certainly not in 1976, but later at Northwestern, now an emeritus professor at the medical school there, and they've sold the house. When she was recording Exile in Guyville, she mostly lived in Wicker Park. But most of what you read says she also was, for some of it, living in this house, in her parents' house in Winnetka. And here, Amy, I hate to break your heart. I spoke to the buyer after we published the story. She said she didn't really know who Liz Phair
was.
Oh,
no.
And here's what she said specifically. She said, well, I'm not from Chicago, so I hadn't really heard of her.
Oh, my word.
Yeah, so I hung up.
Sure.
But she didn't buy the house because of the connection to Liz Phair. She didn't buy it to demolish it either.
Sure.
It's for Winnetka, it's relatively modest, sold in the 600s, while the median price up there is over $1 million. Nice house, just modest for Winnetka.
It's exactly what I had in my head.
Is it really?
It's what I needed it to be. It also, though, the picture that's at chicagobusiness.com, immediately when I looked at it, though, I thought of the house in Twin Peaks.
Oh, because of all the snow on the...
I don't know. It's the snow. It's just the house. It just looks like very, like everything's fine here.
Oh, that's really interesting.
No one's murdering anyone here, like in Twin Peaks. Nothing's happening.
As far as I could tell, no murders happened there. But you know what I thought of? I mean, the Liz Phair part of it, there's sort of a teen suite in the third floor, which may have been originally attic, possibly servant quarters. It's not that big a house, but you might have had a maid who lived upstairs. The listing describes it as a great place for teens. And I was just imagining Liz Phair as a new Trier student,
yes,
hanging out up there, you know, sort of noodling around on the guitar. And then years later, is recording this breakout album, Exile in Guyville, and several albums after that.
I love that. That's her. I imagine that was probably her little, like, creative. Well, you know, when you're a teenage, well, I was a teenage girl, but teenage anybody, you're like, God, you people don't understand me with your parents.
How far can I get away from my parents?
How can I get away from
them?
So
they had a third
still under their roof.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, okay. So shifting back to the city a little bit, Fulton Market, more news there. I've talked to Danny Ecker many times about Fulton Market because of so much commercial real estate going on there. Here's one that's a story that concerns both of you, and that is some residential real estate going up. It is right in that spot where Ogden and Randolph meet. It used to be Belly Q and Urban Belly across from Kaiser Tiger, right there, that one spot that is always crawling with people in all of the summer festivals as soon as that happens. Right. Lots of body glitter right there from the park.
Like I'm wearing right now.
Exactly. I was going to say. exactly like that. But here's this big residential bet that's kind of being placed right now that's, it's hard to imagine being in that spot, but it's also kind of points to, you know what, in a decade, we're not going to even recognize that area.
Oh, absolutely. I think if you flash back a decade, you probably don't recognize a lot of it. I mean, I remember when the L stop, the new Green Line stop came in, none of what's around it was there, though it sort of presaged what was coming. Yeah, so Danny's story, Danny filed this story very late last night because he was right on top of it. 500 units, residential units coming in three buildings. It isn't specified yet whether apartments or condos, which often happens now. They don't say when they're first setting out what it's going to be. But three buildings on the, as you said, on the west end of Fulton Market. One of the points Danny makes is we're kind of getting used to taller buildings on the east part of Fulton Market and on the east part of the West Loop as well. This is pushing it pretty far west in the, what isn't it, the 1200 block?
I think
and
1400
block of Randolph. So you're really talking about, I mean, you can really see this as the boom town of this era. This is, it's really sort of remarkable to think that not too long ago, there were a couple of art galleries and people still pushing racks of meat on the street here. And now we're talking about 500 homes, as well as you said, a lot of these commercial buildings that Danny and Albie Galoon have written about that have come in over the past few years.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's really surprising.
And to think of that spot where Belly Q and Urban Belly sat, or still is, that building's still there. That's a perfectly fine one-story building. Right. But imagine replacing that with a 21-story. That seems really remarkable for that spot.
Yeah, it really does. To me, the thing, the sort of iconic image over there is those grain towers, which have been there since the late 1800s. They were the Eckhart grain towers, and they've just been sold in the last 2 years, I think, by Archer Daniels Midland. And that, I mean, they look like old industrial Chicago, and sometime soon it'll be new, glassy, slick Chicago, and we will, I guess, ultimately forget that Fulton Market was once a market.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, it's a really strange thing that when we see these big changes in this, it reminds me of how my grandparents used to give directions based on where something used to be.
Oh. Yeah, exactly.
Turn right where so-and-so's store was. Well, I don't, that ended in 1955. I wasn't
here.
I don't know. So there's that. Well, it will look really, really interesting. So what is what can we expect in the week ahead?
Well, there's going to be a lot of data coming out next week because end of May data comes out mid-June. And one of the things I'm looking at is, as you know from conversations we've had, prices have been growing at a very, very slow rate or sagging. They're sort of at the zero level. Sales have been pretty far down. So we'll see whether that trend has continued. I suspect it probably will. One thing I did see yesterday is that in the city, listings of for sale properties, it is down 18% from last year. There are 18% fewer properties on the market than there were this time last year. And I think part of that is, we've discussed a lot of the reasons, but part of it is there's this real sort of reluctance right now because where's the economy going? What's going to happen in the near future? Should I list it now if things are going to stay flat? So one of the things I'm going to watch for is just how far down listings and sales are and whether prices are continuing to stay flat.
Is it weird that I'm always really excited when the real estate data comes out and you get a hold of it and you start telling, I mean, because you start to paint a picture with it and you can see what's happening in such a clear way.
I'm glad you are, Amy, because sometimes, I mean, on the days that it comes out, I know I'm going to publish a negative story and people are going to lambaste me on Twitter.
Sure.
So at least there's you.
There's me. I got your back, Dennis Rodkin.
Thanks, Amy.
All right. Well, until next week, we will talk to you soon and keep reading you in cranes.
Thanks.
Continuing today's stories, Tyson Foods, the biggest U.S. meat processor, wants in on that veggie protein market that is hot with consumers and investors alike. The meat giant is aiming to satisfy demands of the so-called flexitarians, which is a rapidly growing segment of people who eat meat but are cutting back and trying to add more vegetable protein to their diets. So Tyson's solution is a burger that is half pea protein and half Angus beef. In what could be the biggest foray into the burgeoning alternative protein market this year, Tyson said it'll debut the hybrid meat plant patties and a series of other related products this year in grocery stores and restaurants. Tyson's beef plant hybrid burger, sold under the Raised and Rooted brand, is expected to reach consumers in the fall. The brand was developed by Tyson Foods Innovation, Culinary, and Consumer Insights teams in Chicago and Northwest Arkansas, according to the company. Other new products the company plans to offer include sausages and meatballs made of a chicken plant blend. The company is joining the scrum of companies rushing headlong into meat alternatives after Beyond Meat's sizzling IPO in May left them playing catch up. Of note, Tyson sold its stake in Beyond Meat just before their stunning equity debut. Beyond Meat shares are up more than fivefold since they started trading. Looking to reshape a big piece of Fulton Market's burgeoning western edge, Naperville-based developer Marquette is proposing three new buildings with a total of more than 500 residential units along the 1400 block of Randolph on either side of Ogden, according to zoning applications that were filed yesterday with the city. The highest profile of the properties would be a 21-story building where Marquette plans to raise the one-story building that previously had restaurants Belly Q and Urban Belly, and instead build a high-rise that would tower over a neighborhood of mostly low-slung industrial buildings. A block west of the 21-story proposal, Marquette wants to demolish a two-story building across the street from Union Park and build two residential properties in its place, one 8 stories and one 6 stories. Those two buildings would include 260 residential units, according to Marquette's zoning application. The 21-story and 6-story proposals each would include a small amount of retail space along their lower floors. Coming up, feds want to figure out why your Metro ride keeps getting delayed. And you probably do too. More on that story after this word from our sponsor. Running a small business comes with hard work, a fair amount of stress, and a lot of responsibility. Wintrust believes you shouldn't have to manage that alone. The company's small business bankers are true partners. They get to know the business they work with so they can offer personalized support and tools to help owners reach their long-term goals. If you're looking for a true banking partner, you've found one. Visit Wintrust.com to learn more. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. Under pending legislation from Congress, federal regulators for the first time would get involved in a long-time hot transportation issue here, and that is the disruption of street and commuter rail traffic by slow-moving freight trains. The proposed language from Representative Dan Lipinski would direct the Federal Railroad Administration, or the FRA, to review on-time performance data and work with the carriers, Amtrak, and other stakeholders to resolve problems. A related clause would require FRA to work nationally to reduce the number of times road traffic is held up to allow a freight train to clear the tracks. FRA reportedly has received more than 1,000 formal complaints in recent years, some of them likely coming from areas in suburban Chicago which have not yet benefited from the program to build bridges and underpasses to avoid traffic woes. Metra, in a statement, made it clear that it hopes that the proposal has legs. Metra and commuter railroads for years have battled over why delays persist and whose responsibility it is to fix them. A full vote by the House is pending. More on this story at chicagobusiness.com. Thanks so much for listening. Until next week, that's all for Crane's Daily Gist. Special thanks to producer Haima Black. Find business news, analysis, data, and so much more at chicagobusiness.com. Let's continue this conversation with hashtag Crane's Daily Gist or find me at Amy Guth on Twitter.